Yo, what is up, guys? Welcome back to Tag Team, Pokemon Trading Card Games' premier podcasting duo. My name is Riley Holbert, joined, as always, by my good, good friend, Mr. JW Kriwal. JW, how's it going today?
It's going pretty good, Riley. I am in Indianapolis right now.
And you know that Nationals is no longer in Indianapolis, nor is it right now.
I know. We're traveling. This is the midway point, the rest stop on our way to Chicago. My wife's friend from college is having a wedding in Chicago over the weekend, so we're coming in and she's playing some music, so we got to get in early. So we have to leave on Wednesday to get there by Thursday so that she can rehearse. It's a whole thing.
Sounds like you got quite the latter half of a week ahead.
I know. I got a lot of like baby time on my hands.
Well, nothing to hate about that. I suppose you can get her trained up in the Pokemon card sphere.
That's right. Yeah, maybe I did bring some of her cards, so I'm sure she'll be playing with those for sure.
How have things been otherwise?
Oh, pretty good. You know, project is finishing up at work, so I'm less bleak about it than I was talking to you last week before the cast. But things are looking up here. Trying to think about. Oh, yeah, I've been to a bunch of locals recently.
Yeah, and we'll definitely be digging into that. But you've been fully capitalizing on the return of local events, so that's
trying.
I honestly have been in a little bit of a locals desert. It feels like there's no events besides like one league challenge in the next 2 months or something on the event locator within a reasonable distance of me. So that's a little disappointing.
That's kind of crazy because as a college town, you'd imagine that there are a lot of students, you know, young adults looking to play, that they'd have enough like card stores to host various cups and challenges.
Yeah, there definitely were pre-pandemic. We had like two local leagues that would do cups and challenges in the area, in the city itself, and then Madison or the state of Wisconsin would have a decent amount of stuff going on in reasonable driving distance. But mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing's popped up. Maybe I'm just using the locator wrong, but I don't think that's the case.
And it could just be that they haven't scheduled them yet.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not been too long since they've had the opportunity to schedule them. Some people just were really on it.
Our local scene, we've had, I think, four challenges already.
That's
like
crazy.
After this weekend's over, I think five of the stores in the area will have hosted a challenge.
That's crazy.
That's pretty crazy.
It's only been like 2 weeks as of Friday.
Exactly. I know. They're just shooting their shot early.
Well, you know, I just can't hate that. You know, a lot of stuff to do. You know, at the end of the day, I have my world's invite, so it's not like I'm clamoring to get as many local events in as possible. But, you know, I'd still like to, if there's something in the city itself, I would love to swing over and have some fun playing Pokemon cards, you know, my hobby, so.
Sure, yeah, if you're only 10, 15, 20 minutes away, might as well take advantage.
Yeah, exactly. Like, now that I have my invite, I'm not going to be on the grind. I'm not going to be driving, like, multiple hours to go to a cup or something. But if there's something in Madison, if there's something, like, 40 minutes away, less, ideally, then, I still like playing the game. I like playing Pokemon cards. I like going to tournaments. So
winning.
It's a fun opportunity. Yeah, absolutely. I love winning. So why don't we just kind of dive into it? So for today, we're going to be talking about JW's experience at his slew of local events over the last 2 weeks. And then we'll be shifting gears in the latter half to talk about if you were to go to a local event and you have sort of a gauge on your local scene, what you might bring to those events. So JW, why don't you just regale us with the tales of your excellence?
Well, I don't know. It's been largely excellent. I had a dud there in the middle, but I was going into local events with the idea that I could just breeze through and kind of get my feel for them without doing much testing beforehand. And I know that that's bad. I always feel like I have these grandiose ideas, especially for locals, of like, oh yeah, I'm going to test really hard and I'm going to, you know, make spreadsheets and I'm going to take copious notes on the test games that I get in. But it just kind of felt like these local tournaments snuck up on me and I wasn't quite able to put the time in that I felt like I needed.
Which, to be fair, they kind of snuck up on everybody.
Yeah, that's true. It was like, oh yeah, by the way, cups are returning and there's one next week.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, heading into this new format, I had a lot of, you know, thoughts about, you know, Guardi seemed good. You know, after EUIC, I was just thinking a lot about Guardi. I was thinking a lot about Mew. Obviously, Lugia, still a fine play. Gudra, you guys played to really great success. So these are kind of the decks that were forefront in my mind. And for the first league challenge, I just decided to go with a Mew deck that had a Squovid in it, which was kind of fun. You know, it's just like, I feel like I'm more, even though I needed a finish at this league challenge, I only needed really realistically like a top four. And I was pretty confident that my Mew deck with a Squovid could get me a top four placement. And ultimately, it did. The Squovid did cost me one game against a Gudra deck because they were able to snipe the Squovid and a damaged Mew for...
Not the Squovid.
I know. The filthy Squovid, dude. It was insane. But it ended up being a card that won me the finals match because I was just able to dig way further than I ever could have otherwise. So it was kind of a double-edged sword. Ultimately, moving forward, I decided to cut the Squovid because it was more cute than actually practical. But it was definitely a nice idea, and I'm glad I tried it. So in that first challenge, I went 3-1, and one of the funniest things about the challenge was it was a win-a-box. So they had it advertised as the player with the best record at the end of the challenge would walk away with a booster box of Scarlet and Violet. Well, it just so happened that at the challenge there were four of us at 3-1. So they had advertised it as being winner, you know, the person with the best record would win the box, and they ended up having a four-way tie for having the best record. Now, of course, I didn't place first in the challenge points. Like, I got fourth, so I only got the 10 points. But I made everybody play it out in a four-game best of one for the booster box because loose packs just don't really excite me anymore.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get the booster box, so I figured it would have been better to have played it out and lost than to not have played it out at all. So yeah. I made everyone play it out. I ended up winning the tournament and walked away with a booster box, which I was pretty happy with. 10 points in a booster box, not too bad for, you know, 3 hours of work. And then I got a little cocky. So my second league challenge, I was thinking like, okay, this would, like, again, thinking I could pretty much take just about any deck that I wanted to and go in and get top four. So I was between Gardevoir and Lost Box for this tournament because I wanted to switch it up. I didn't want to just be, you know, a Mew Randy for the entire local scene. I was thinking, okay, this might be some good practice for the next regional, you know, just get some experience with some other decks that I hadn't played before or, you know, haven't played in tournaments. Obviously, Gardevoir just being released, but Lost Zone, I hadn't really played in any tournaments. So I was between those two, ultimately settled on Gardevoir for that tournament. I figured that it would be something that I'd have a bit more fun with, to be honest. I was doing a lot of like test hands, and I feel like Gardevoir is one of those decks that is amazing for solitaire. Doing a lot of solitaire hands, and I was getting juice every time, you know, starting with a VIP pass, going into the Mew, hitting another VIP pass off the top, you know, grab a Greninja, drawn two, turn two, three, Curly out. You know, it's just insane what I was getting. And so I was like, okay, this is going to be way more fun. And how could I not get top four? Uh-huh. Anyway, I round one play against a Pokedad who is playing Lost Zone Box. And I'm like, okay, this is not the worst. Like, I have ways to win this. I have the penny still. Like, I can maybe make some plays. But No, he proceeds to do everything exactly right and like gets kind of, I don't want to say he gets extremely lucky, but he played one boss, and on his second turn, he went first. He was able to boss KO my Manaphy, and then followed that up with a knockout with the Greninja on two Kirlia, and it just kind of went all downhill from there. So, not saying, obviously his deck did what it wanted to do, but I was just a little bit salty that it happened like that.
Yeah.
And then I was able to take round two, and then in round three, I played a Gardevoir, and I prized my prizes. And it always sucks to do that. So I prized my last Gardevoir EX, and I spent a turn that I needed to use, like, disrupting their hand. I had to play a Miriam, and it just was not the greatest in terms of the prizing. So that was that league challenge. So I walked away from two league challenges with only 10 points. What's that?
And a booster box.
That's true. And a booster box. But I was a little disheartened because obviously, I could close out my World's Invite by winning four local tournaments. If I won two league challenges and I won two league cups, that would give me 130 points, and that would give me exactly 350 because I had accrued at this point 220 from regionals. So I was a little, disappointed. Obviously wanted to at least put myself in good position to not have to make like a super deep run at NAIC or at Wisconsin regionals. Here comes the OSU Cup. And this was just, I had an unbelievable piece before the tournament. I knew I was going to play Mew. I was like, you know what? This is the deck that we've played a lot of this season. I have all the, cool techs for it. I really feel like, Pablo's list was pretty good with some minor modifications. I feel like it's pretty good for this metagame where I expected, I got to see that a lot of people were playing Gardy. I got to see that a lot of people were playing Lost Zone Box, which I felt very comfortable against. A lot of people were playing Gudra, and there weren't a ton of decks. There weren't like a lot of Arceus Duraludon, which can get kind of weird. There weren't a ton of decks playing double Drapion that could get kind of weird. So it just felt like a really good metagame for Mew based on what I had seen from the challenges. And yeah, opted to play Mew just like as consistent of a Mew deck as I could build, and wound up taking down that League Cup, which was a fantastic feeling because it's such a huge bump in points. Even to get top four or whatever, like it's such a massive bump for your CP that it just felt like a weight off my shoulders because, going from 230, you're getting a seventh of your invite off of one afternoon of work. I mean, it's crazy. So felt great.
Well, that's awesome. So that puts you at 280 then after all.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And you have up to, 65 more points that you could get from locals without replacing a finish.
Yes, exactly.
So, that puts you in a pretty comfortable position. I mean, if you could replace that other league challenge with the first and we get a win at a cup.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's certainly hopefully some opportunities for more league challenge finishes, but it's just timing, It's just we're out of town some weekends. We're traveling, doing things. I want to stay home with the wife and kid. There's not a ton of time, so I want to be as efficient as possible with all this.
For sure, for sure. Well, I mean, that's at least exciting. How would you say that your deck sort of performed? And, would you recommend or would you run back that Mew deck if you were to play again?
I would run back the Mew deck, but it performed extremely average the entire day. I was going through. I ended up, I think this might have been kind of the culprit, but I ended up going second in every round except the finals. And so, obviously, when you're going first with the double turbo Mew, you feel pretty invincible. Because on that turn two, you're able to, either boss your opponent's big threat or, just judge them, maybe throw a path down. Like, you're able to do so many more things on your turn two, as opposed to going second where you just will always pass that first turn.
Yeah.
And then you have to wait, kind of an additional turn. Your opponent gets an additional turn to set up. So, I would play it again, but I was like counting my turn one starts that I got a full bench And I think I only had that happen, even through all of Top Cut, twice.
Yeah.
Where I just fill the bench up completely and you know, again, be able to make any play that my deck wanted to. I only had it twice. So it felt extremely average over the course of the entire day. Now, average for that deck is, I think, better overall than the average for most other decks. Like, if you think about the, you know, the average play for like a Lugia deck is to get one Archaeops out on turn two. And that really isn't, you know, that wasn't always good enough to get it done last format. It definitely isn't good enough to get it done this format, because your attackers, I think, are a little, you know, more needy, more energy hungry. And then, you know, your average for Gardevoir is, you know, what? Like maybe getting two Curlia out on turn two, and that's like very susceptible to hand disruption knockout or, you know, just like sniping or something like that. That to say, like the average for Mew, especially with the list that I brought, was, you know, just getting a turn two attack. You know, you're doing 190, potentially, you know, 220, or, you know, you're potentially getting that knockout on that second turn, despite not having a full bench. And that was kind of what I wanted to do with the list, is make sure that every turn two, no matter what my setup was, that I was getting that turn two attack, that I was at least putting pressure on with the attack. Could you deal with the 310 HP VMAX? And if not, then maybe I can get more back into the game as the turns progress.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty fair assessment. You know, Mew is not quite as explosive as it used to be. You know, Quick Ball was a devastating loss for many, but yeah, perhaps Mew most of all. But at the end of the day, you know, it's a deck that draws a lot of cards and does it quickly. So even if you don't have the same level of bench filling and hand thinning, then you at least still have all the other upsides of playing Mew.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it was a great deck. You know, in terms of the result, in terms of how I felt playing it round after round, it was just, it was extremely middling. I wish that there was, you know, a deck that I felt more comfortable with that would have had a better shot, you know, to play with. Like, I'm not married to Mew necessarily heading out of this weekend. And there were a lot of people respecting Mew. Yeah. For the amount of Mew that there were in the room. I think there were three players playing Mew. One was playing a Fusion Strike build, and he ended up, I think, dropping from the tournament. And then there were Jesse and I. Now, granted, we did finish 1-2, but it just felt like, I think pretty much every round, aside from the Lugia players, which play Dark Attackers of their own, I was playing against, you know, at least one Drapion. So
yeah.
Certainly a lot of Mew respect for that many Mew out there.
I think Mew carries with it a sort of vendetta, you know. Mm. Mew is is an oft-hated deck, and to be honest, like local level players are the types of people who hate Mew the most, you know.
That's so true.
You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Not to disparage anybody, but like Mew is a frustrating deck to play against. It is. So, like, I feel like if I was going to a local and I saw, like, one Mew player, it was like, screw it. Drapion's going to my deck.
Drapion's in. You're in, bud.
You know? Take no L's.
That's right.
So, you know, I could see that perspective, certainly. So, sounds like overall things were pretty successful. Looking forward, you know, do you have other events that are kind of on your radar outside of the Milwaukee and NAIC?
I don't. I mean, there are a few league challenges that I know are scheduled, but I'm going to be busy for them. And I don't know of any cups at this point in the Columbus, Dayton area. I'm sure that there are stores in the area that are just waiting to be able to, you know, schedule them. I don't know. Maybe there's other tournaments or other conflicts that they have. But at this point, I don't have anything yet lined up for the future.
Well, hopefully some more stuff gets scheduled in the coming weeks so you can, you know, squeeze your way in there. But otherwise, you still do have those last couple of events. You've gotten yourself over the top 256 threshold for NAIC, which is good.
I know.
That's an important milestone.
That is really important. Because, I mean, I'm looking at it this way because I feel like it's a very difficult task to like max out your local finishes, especially with there only being one quarter of locals. So it's really unrealistic for me to expect to win three more tournaments, to win the two league challenges and final cup. But what I can do is put myself in a really good position to potentially only need a top, I don't know, what's 30 points at a regional? Top 256?
Yeah.
Or to get, you know, what does it extend down to at nationals? Top 256?
Probably still 256, yeah.
Yeah, so you know, I give myself a good chance to have two tournaments where I just need the lowest possible point threshold to achieve definitely. The invite.
And I think that's, like, exactly what you want, where you want to be, right? Is to be able to... Right. Just squeak in there with one okay finish.
That's right. I know. It's like, and it's just, when it's coming down to the wire like this, it's kind of exciting. Like, I like the pressure and I like the challenge of it all. But it's just so frustrating looking back on the tournament runs that I had where I was like a couple placements off of a higher finish. You know, where I was 36th instead of 32nd, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know... 68th instead of 64th, where it's like those 10 points actually will end up mattering in some capacity in terms of the ease of closing out the invite. But like I said, excited to hit up some more tournaments. I mean, looking forward to regionals and obviously NAIC.
You know, if you want to talk about kind of the bubbling in mattering, did you know that Andrew not only bubbled into top 64 at UIC, but as a result of that bubble in and the extra 30 CP that he got, he also bubbled into top 16 for, well, not bubbled in. He also placed top 16 NA for the quarter because he bubbled in at UIC.
So he got he's getting a stipend to Columbus?
Yeah.
Oh, my. That's actually unreal.
All off of it was like one or two people bubbled into top 64. He was 64th place. So good.
That's insane. All right, well, so he's getting some swanky hotel or what?
I mean, I don't think you have to spend it all on like the trip.
Okay, well then you guys could all crash in my place and then he could, you know, he could use that money to fund the Japan trip.
Yeah, so it's just insane. What a sack.
That is a sacky move.
Well, why don't we pivot to our card of the day, and then we'll head over into our recommendations for our listeners' locals.
Absolutely. So today's card of the day, there's no flavor text here, but Riley, I'll give you a couple of attacks.
Okay.
And this is an older card, so think, you know, first 5 years of cards. Okay, I'll kind of give you a time frame. All right, two attacks. First attack, Summon Storm.
Summon Storm, okay.
Summon Storm. Second attack. This might give it away. In terms of the Pokemon that it is, but it's a little more spicy than that. All right. First attack, Summon Storm. Second attack, Dragon Tornado.
Summon Storm is Dragon Tornado. Is it a Rayquaza?
This is first 5 years of the cards.
Oh, yeah. First 5 years. Summon Storm. What the heck? The only, like, Pokemon, Dragon Pokemon I could think of would be, like, Kingdra or maybe Gyarados.
Yeah, it is a Gyarados. This is from Giovanni's Gyarados.
Oh, Giovanni's Gyarados. Yeah,
Giovanni's. Well, that's what makes this card so interesting and why I really enjoyed it so much as a kid. Because you have Giovanni, right? He has the poison types, which in the TCG at that time are represented by the grass. So, of course, you have the classic kind of Nidoran, Nidorino, Nidoking, same Nidoqueen. And then, of course, there was the Persian and Meowth combo. Those were, you know, two from the anime. And then you had the fighting types. So Giovanni's Machamp and the Rhyhorn Rhydon. But what I, you know, was like kind of flabbergasted as a kid by, I was like, Giovanni doesn't have water types. That's just not something in the game that he has. And so I saw this card, Giovanni's Gyarados. And I just was, you know, shocked that Giovanni could have a non-fighting, non-poison type. So Giovanni's Gyarados, a couple of attacks there. Pretty terrible. I mean
a just, lot of the gym Pokemon, like, were terrible.
I know it's really sad. It's really sad. But I here's one other fun stat. All these other Pokemon I'm looking at, like Giovanni's Machamp is, you know, 5 feet tall. Giovanni's Nidoking is 4.5 feet tall. The Nidoqueen is 4 feet tall. Like, these are very small Pokemon.
Yeah, Nidoqueen Gyarados? And Nidoking are mad short. They're
they're short kings and queens for sure. Yeah. The Giovanni's Gyarados is 21 feet long.
Now, which how tall absurd. Do you think that makes Gyarados? Because Gyarados is kind of like wavy, right. You know, so. Kind of
coiled up. Let's see. There's two apexes to Gyarados. So, and if we're thinking like bottom of the belly to top of the fin, what's that height?
Would it be like a little over, you know, between 5 and 6 feet?
That seems appropriate, right?
You know, if each one of those, if you consider it as like four segments, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then it's a little uneven, right?
Cause yeah, he holds exactly. Its head so up. I think maybe it's closer to 6 feet.
Yeah, yeah. That seems like a good guess. I'm sure it's addressed somewhere in the anime.
Yeah, can we get the lore on this? Nice, Giovanni. I did not know Giovanni owned a Gyarados. That's sick. it really the gym Pokemon is really a shame how bad so many of them were.
That seems like prime reprint material.
Yeah, I'm looking at Misty's Gyarados as well, since it popped up in my Google search, and that Pokemon is really bad.
Who else have Gyarados out there?
That's a good question. I might just be them too for the trainer Pokemon.
Lieutenant Surge's Gyarados, I bet it exists. No, just
kidding. I mean, that's right. Misty's Gyarados shuffles itself back into the deck. If you flip too many tails.
Oh my gosh.
Well, anyway, why don't we pivot then away from the long Gyarados to instead talk about our long members and our sponsor for this week's episode.
Absolutely. This week, the Tag Team Pokemon Podcast is presented by Manscaped, one of the premier, if not the premier, company for your men's grooming needs. Manscaped has everything they have you covered, from your ear and nose hair trimmers to the Weed Whacker 4.0. They have all of the products that you could ever need to keep every hair right in its little place.
That's so true. So true. You know, I was actually having a real life conversation, believe it or not, the other day. And I was talking a little bit about the podcast, and Manscaped came up, right? And they're asking, like, yeah, like, is this, you know, what do you think of working with Manscaped? And I told them straight up, you know, I actually really, really enjoy working with Manscaped because they have an awesome selection of products. And I use every single one of them. So whether you're looking to wear their Boxers 2.0 for tournament success, or you're looking to keep your grooming needs in order with the Weed Whacker or the Lawn Mower or the Beard Hedger, Manscaped's got you covered. And the great news is that those of us at Tag Team also got you covered. So if you head on over to manscaped.com, find what works best for you. Maybe you got a nose hair that's a little too long. Pluck that out with a Weed Whacker. Put that in your cart. Type in code TAG TEAM, that's TAGTEAM, at checkout, and you will get not only 20% off, but free shipping.
It's a pretty good deal. Yeah, and in fact, I did wear my boxers for the cup win. So that's another one. The boxer lore chalked up for the boxers. The boxer lore grows. So be a part of the crew. Head on over to manscaped.com. Code tag team at checkout. 20% off plus free shipping. That's tag team at checkout. 20% off plus free shipping.
Thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast. And thanks to you all for checking them out. IJW, so you've had your own set of local success, but I'm sure many of our listeners out there are looking ahead to the horizons and they have locals of their own coming up. So what comes to mind for you as you're planning for some of these local events? You know, what might you consider as factors for choosing from this wide array of viable decks in this format?
Well, I do think that the leagues and the especially the league challenges have given me good insight as to what people might play. So for instance, there's one player, I've seen him at every event locally. I know he lives in town. He's played nothing but Magnezone Dialga for every tournament.
Heck yeah.
And I'm not saying, I mean, he's done like pretty well with it. I think he made top eight at the cup. He was my finals opponent in the first challenge. Like that, I'm not like sloughing on the deck at all or his play at all. But you just have those players out there that are, you just know, are going to mainline one deck until it dies. And it might be their favorite pet deck. It might be some goofy rogue. But those are always players to consider. And you always get a pulse on that by going to the local tournaments and being able to, you know, just scout and see what people are playing. That could certainly influence how you approach a large metagame of a cup. In terms of the decks that I have been, you know, mulling over and telling others to play, I think that there's a few decks that really stand out that I've been telling players to play for a variety of reasons. If you're going into a completely blind metagame, let's say you haven't gone to any locals or you're going to another city or something that you know nobody, I mean, Lugia is just a fine play. It's just remained good. If you get both Archaeops in the discard pile with the Summoning Star on turn two, there are not too many decks that can overcome that amount of pressure. So that to me seems like a fine deck for a blind metagame that you don't know what anybody's playing. I like Mew, but it sometimes, if you're not that well versed with it and certain plays, it's not particularly good into certain Lost Box variants. And it's not particularly good into decks that play double Drapion. Now, you can't get around them. Certainly not the end of the world playing a Gudra deck with double Drapion, for instance. But it certainly can be hard. So you want to make sure that you have kind of your pulse on the metagame to know whether or not players are going to respect Mew or not. You know, largely, I would have said players respected Mew at the cup that I went to. But I could see that not being the case since the numbers are not really that, you know, they're not really there, right, from you. Like, it's third most played deck, fourth most played deck.
Yeah, I mean,
and it feels kind of difficult to justify. Down. Yeah, it feels difficult to justify continuing to tech that hard for that matchup unless you're assuming that the Drapion can do some work against Gardevoir. Gardevoir is another interesting deck that I would recommend to players, but the Lost Box matchup is so bad that that one is another deck that you really just have to be confident that not every other player is going to be playing Lost Box. And my locals were full of Lost Box. That's ultimately what scared me off of playing the deck for my cup. And I think it ultimately proved to be a good choice because I played a couple of Lost Box over the course of the tournament. And I know I just would have lost to them had I played Gardevoir. So Gardevoir, an extremely powerful deck, but really any Lost Box variant you do not want to see.
Yeah. So, I'm sensing a couple of different, you know, pathways, so to speak. Mew is maybe a generic catch-all if you know that it's a safe space.
right.
You have Lugia as sort of the generic safe pick, relatively stable into most matchups. And then you have Gardevoir, which is really explosively strong, but just struggles against the Sableye-focused Lossone decks. Let's say that you know that you have a metagame that's pretty Lossone heavy. You know, Lossone has been sort of the premier archetype in this past format. What would you say to a player heading into that kind of situation?
I think Gudra is a knockout pick for that metagame. If it's largely Lossone box variants, you can't go wrong with Gudra. I think that that deck has proven itself in this meta to be a fine pick. And I think especially as these lists go less away from like needing to power up Gudra via the Lossone engine and more towards, you know, maybe playing a few extra energy so they can just manually attach and power up a Gudra without having to get seven in the Lossone to activate the Mirage Gates. I think that's a great play into a Lost Box heavy metagame.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I think Gudra is good or I wouldn't have played it to the European International Championship. I also think another selling point of Gudra is if your locals is got Lugia as well. Gudra, and if you look at just the numbers on PokéStats, Gudra is a very favorable Lugia matchup, which lines up with our experience in the tournament as well. So I would say if you're looking at kind of a relatively average metagame, I would say a relatively average locals metagame that has a mixture of Lugia and Lossone box, then Gudra is a really solid choice into that sort of generic space. Gudra's really failing point would be the fact that it isn't very good versus Gardevoir.
Right. That is certainly something to consider because obviously I think a lot of players, what I saw from my first local tournament was that just a lot of players maybe weren't playing great lists of Gardevoir, but they just loved to play it.
Yeah, and, well, that's the thing.
You know, it's the shiny new toy syndrome. And so, you know, that's certainly something to watch out for.
Well, I think there's a lot of things that draw maybe a local player or even just players in general to Gardevoir. You know, it's got the shiny toy syndrome. It's the newest deck in the format. It's also just cool, you know, and I've said this multiple times before. You got the infinite acceleration, which is just cool. Like, that's sick. You have the draw engine with the Curlio, which is fun to use and cool. It's a stage 2 deck, which is just appealing to some people, like being able to evolve up your Pokemon. So I think there's a lot of factors that sort of draw people to Gardevoir, which is the only thing that makes me a little bit anxious about Gudra. But I think Gudra can take enough games versus Gardevoir, especially in best of one, that you can justify bringing it, especially if you're expecting Lugia. The Gudra matchup into Lugia is really just incredibly favored if they're not playing the Urshifu.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's maybe flip gears then. If you said that Gardevoir is not super favored into Lost Zone box, so if you're expecting that your local scene is going to be somewhat Gardevoir heavy, is that what you would recommend? And does that stay true if the Gardevoirs are playing the V-Union?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think if they're playing the V-Union, then I think Mew VMAX becomes a better choice because you're more able to lock them down. You just kind of outrace them to the prizes, and at which point by the end of the game when they finally get that Mewtwo V-Union out, it doesn't really matter. So I would say if they are playing the V-Union, then Mew is a potentially better choice, and if they aren't, then straight Lost Box is a little bit better.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Have you tried much of the Gardevoir V-Union yourself? Do you think it's a solid choice for players?
I don't like it because of kind of the reasoning. I mean, not just against Mew, but you think about the Lost Box decks that, you know, especially like the Turbo Lost Box decks that are just going to out-trade you. And then by the time you finally get out that Mewtwo V-Union, they just go Escape Rope or boss and win the game that way. So it just feels like it's a card that players want to play more than have kind of identified its strengths. And I just don't see it. There's too many things that can go wrong. By the time it gets up, you might not even have the, you know, time to really make good use of it. So yeah, it's not a card that I love for those reasons.
I was playing TCG Live the other day, and I had an opponent get a turn two V-Union attack.
Unbelievable. Now that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, if you could do that every game.
Yeah. Yeah. Why aren't more people getting it on turn two?
It was so insane. They had two Curlias, a Gardevoir EX, and a Mewtwo V.
That's crazy.
I know. I felt like embarrassed about how badly I lost.
So there's one other deck that has intrigued me too that I should be putting more time into, but obviously I feel fairly comfortable with it from playing it a lot last season, but that's Arceus Space decks. And obviously Arceus Duraludon is the king. I mean, we have Alex Szymanski to thank for kind of giving us the standard list moving forward. Where do you think Arceus fits into this metagame? Is it a good play for locals or not? I saw a couple players at my cup play Arceus, but they ended up like failing out just due to some consistency issues and maybe some poor matchups. But where do you think that Arceus-based decks fall in this metagame?
You know, in theory, I don't think Arceus decks are necessarily bad for locals. And the reason I say that is they have the implicit consistency that comes with Arceus V-Star power, which is nice to have, and it's reassuring in a best of one setting, right? That you can have that Starbirth access and, you know, get your game plan going most games. The one, I think, maybe detriment of Arceus, maybe two, depending on how you think about it, is it's a relatively counterboxy style deck is how the Arceus Duraludon deck is built. So it's, you know, relatively targeted in what it's trying to accomplish. So if you're playing like the random local deck in round two and they go outside of that game plan, things could get challenging. You know, if you're playing a couple Maraidon or something, you know, the Arceus deck doesn't really love playing against those, things like that. I also don't think the Guardi matchup is like that crazy good. Even though Alex did win in the finals, I think A, Tord showed how possible it is to win that. And I think actually Tord had a real shot to win even that last game if he didn't discard that second Zacian V.
Yes.
Which seemed a little bit reckless in my opinion, but that's neither here nor there. So the point is, I actually don't think it's that good into Guardi. So just to some extent, the Arceus deck puts up similar matchups as Gudra in that way. But maybe has a little bit more of a sneaky win con versus Guardi, where Gudra doesn't have that. So that's kind of my take on it. The one difference is that the Arceus deck has Arceus in it, so you get Starbirth. Right.
Yes, right. And that's a huge consistency boost. Obviously, there are matchups where you'd rather use Vulpix's V-Star attack, most notably in the Mew matchup. But if all else fails, you always have that Starbirth to fall back on. Like you said, getting your game plan to execute is something that I really value in these best-of-one scenarios, where you're looking at a league challenge that might be best-of-one. You're looking at the first, you know, Swiss rounds of a League Cup where two losses and you're out. I mean, I felt the pressure. I lost my first round of the League Cup. And it wasn't really my, you know, necessarily my doing. It was just my opponent ran really hot. I didn't hit exactly what I needed at the right times. And then I was just kind of on the back foot the rest of the day. And so it, you know, it's certainly something that is valued, where it's like, well, okay, if I can play the game every single round, then, you know, there's certainly something to be said for that in a local best of one tournament.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Playing the game by its very nature means that you're more likely to win.
So true. You know? So true.
So hopefully that gives you all some perspective. I think if I was going into a relatively unknown local, I would consider Gudra as a high pick for me. You know, it's a deck that I feel comfortable with in this meta, and I think it still is really decently poised. You know, I think that this meta is fairly wide, though, so you can spin your logic a lot of different ways and justify playing a lot of different decks.
Yeah, it feels like a really strong metagame. Like, in terms of the not in terms of the power level of the decks, although they are very strong, but I just mean a very healthy metagame in that there are a wide variety of choices, and there's enough tech ability in all of these decks that you can make good deck choices and then have those good deck choices be augmented by the techs that you're choosing to come up with a tournament-winning deck. I think it's a really nice balance of just core strength of these decks and then the variety of techs that are available to them.
Agreed. So before we wrap for today, JW, one of the hot topics over the last few days in the Pokemon Twitter sphere has been the concept of best of one versus best of three locals. It's honestly kind of I'm almost wondering like why this topic came up at all. I feel like most locals in the States are best of one, and a lot of locals in like the UK, for example, are best of three. But I'm curious for your take and sort of how you get there. On my side of the spectrum, I think I prefer best of one locals because I like my locals to be a little bit snappier. You know, I'd rather lose to variance and just have a quicker day and that be my tournament, or win on variance and have it be a quicker day than Okay, I don't know what happened with my audio source there, but I was saying something. Where did you lose me?
You were saying a quicker day.
Oh, yeah, I would prefer like a quicker day to be wrapped with my local at like a reasonable time than I would to have a more variance resistant tournament, I suppose is how I phrase it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm 100% with you. Like, I am all for best of one local tournaments. Maybe a best of one, maybe you play best two out of three when you get to top cut, a lot of players do for these cups. But without a doubt, a league challenge, one round, get me out of there. I think what best of one does really nicely is it keeps these individual rounds really snappy.
Yeah.
And the best of threes, what can end up happening is you have one table that goes really long with a game one, and that forces them to go to time, and then they're playing out their plus three turns, and it just bogs the whole tournament down. When if they had just played that one game, maybe they would have been done. Before the timer, right? Before the clock went off. So it just, I like the best of ones in the sense that they keep things going, they keep things moving a lot more, and you can get bogged down a great deal by just having one table go to best of three in those Swiss rounds if you're playing best of three. It just makes for a really long day that can be kind of frustrating.
No, definitely. I mean, if you think of like a five or six round local, let's say six rounds, and maybe the round turnaround is, 5 minutes after a round finishes at a local tournament, but you have one table every round that goes to time in both scenarios. Well, in best of one, that means you're looking at like a 40 minute turnaround time between rounds once you consider the plus three turns.
Yep.
But in best of three, that means you're looking at like an hour and 15 minutes turnaround time for once you consider the plus three turns. And that's really grueling. You multiply that by six rounds and, that's a whole business day that you're spending at your local card store, which is great, for supporting the store, I guess. But, I think it detracts from the spirit of like, enjoying the game in a more casual setting with
your friends. Right. Keep the locals casual and keep the majors more competitive. Absolutely.
And for JW's lights immediately turn off. So I guess JW's time limit has been reached as he enters the darkness here. But I think that's a good closing thought. So we're fans of the best of one locals. Again, I think it's kind of interesting the discourse even came up at all, because I don't think it's really controversial to say that people like best of one locals.
No doubt.
Well, All that said, we appreciate your all's continued listenership. Next week, I will be traveling, so expect a little bit of a shakeup in our typical routine. And again, we appreciate all of you. Please check out the Manscaped code, and please do check out the shirts if you're interested in getting some tag team merch.
Yeah, those shirts are over on flexdaddy.cards. You can also read up on my tournament reports. I've been doing those for the local tournaments, so those have been a lot of fun. So if you want to read a round-by-round synopsis of what went down, head on over to flexdaddy.cards, pick up a shirt while you're there. You can also find us on social media at Tag Team Pokemon, on Twitter for the podcast, at Smiles with Riles, and myself, at Real John Walter. I stream a couple days a week over at twitch.tv/flexdaddyrighteous, and the podcast is most often than not streamed over at twitch.tv/munner.
Awesome. And so please do check us out, like and subscribe, and all that kind of fun stuff. And please do rate and review. And with that, we're going to check out for today. Thanks, everybody. Peace.
See ya.